Welcome to the Whiskey and Wisdom Podcast, coming to you from the Cargo District Recording Studios in Wilmington, North Carolina, where we discuss the most fascinating topics of life. I'm Tyler Yaw with my co-host, Chris Kelly, and each week we interview a special guest to learn how they acquired their wisdom over a glass of whiskey. So sit back, pour yourself a glass, and enjoy Whiskey and Wisdom.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's your constant co-host, Chris Kellum, and my troublemaker over here,
Tyler, y'all.
Every day.
This week, we have on...
Sarah Auld.
See, I couldn't pronounce your last name.
Oh, Auld. Just think the word all with a D on the end.
Okay.
Easy enough.
I read names, and I'm like, I'm going to ruin that.
So I'm going to let you say it.
And, you know, as per usual, she'll tell us a little bit about herself. Because I know nothing besides that you own a business.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah.
I'm excited about that. But this week, we are mixing it up. Sarah is not a whiskey drinker, so she is testing out our Howlerhead.
Not often.
Oh, right.
Not often, but in college, the Whiskey Coke was a good go-to.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, man, I should bring on some like Crown or something.
Bring it back to the old days.
Yes. But Tyler and I are adding to our palette the Old Forester Bottled in Bond. Just a little different. I found it at the Starling a while back and I was like, you know, it looks good. Let's try it. It's supposed to have some vanilla taste as well as some coffee notes. And then it was matured in oak barrels. And then it has a chill kind of finish.
It sounds really good. And I might have to try it before I leave today because every time I get coffee, I get a vanilla latte if it's out somewhere.
Yeah.
So, we could deal with that.
On target.
Yeah. Let's taste it. See what you think.
I have a vanilla cappuccino here, too. So we'll see how that goes.
Cheers, Mr.
Cheers. Cheers. And I have my plantain-y, the Howlerhead banana flavored whiskey.
Oh.
It does have a strong vanilla taste to it.
Not bad.
Is that a positive?
Yes, yeah. That is a positive. Okay. You get the coffee on the back end, or at least I do anyway. I get vanilla first, and then I get coffee. Well, you don't like coffee, so.
Yeah. Oh, that's hard.
Mm-hmm. No, it goes back and forth. Everyone's like, oh, do you want coffee at work? I'm like, I mean, can I get an caramel apple spice
or tea? Oh, my God. That's hilarious.
I am the worst. Now that we've tried a little whiskey, Sarah, tell us a little about yourself.
Yeah. So my name is Sarah Auld. I was born and raised in a very small town called Windsor in upstate New York. I moved to Wilmington in 2015, became a personal trainer. Mm. While I was a personal trainer, I opened my first company, which is a nonprofit, and we would raise money to help people afford fitness, and then it grew into nutrition, okay. Mental health care. Yeah, so we were essentially subsidizing the cost of wellness for people. And then in 2021, I opened my second company, which is Upper.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And so Upper is really this kind of graduation of Health Possible, where it focuses on the accessibility of the wellness industry. And so we do that by building software and online marketplace that connects people to the most effective care based on their needs. And what we're building on the back end is software, essentially. So we're getting trainers, for example, to be able to send a referral to a dietitian in the most basic form. Yeah, that's its most basic form.
I was like, I never knew that.
That's very interesting. So what kind of got you started and involved in Upper and made you want to start it?
That's a great question, and this will be the first most legit story of the day if you're ready for it.
Yes. I'm definitely ready for it.
Okay. So I had Health Possible, my nonprofit, since 2017.
Okay.
And so as the years went on, like I mentioned, we started with fitness and then slowly grew into the other industries like nutrition, mental health, and so forth. And so that was a very manual process for years. And we actually ended up developing financial technology over there. Mm. So it started really back then because if somebody couldn't afford wellness, we needed a way to, one, verify that they couldn't afford it. But then also, two, we were out negotiating rates with providers, right, as a company to get, you know, of course, the most affordable thing for the nonprofit and the person.
Yeah.
And so we did that for probably 4 or so years. And we were doing it all in Microsoft Excel, meaning that in order to prove somebody couldn't afford things, we had built a calculator that according to somebody's income, we would be willing to financially aid so much. Right.
Okay.
So we'd plug in their income. It would spit out the financial aid amount. We had this array of providers that we had been negotiating care rates with to match people up. And then within about 4 years, I looked at the team and I said, guys, you know, we can really scale and reach a lot more people if we weren't actually funding the care itself, like if we weren't actually paying for it and we don't need to. What if we used this kind of income calculator, right, where when somebody submitted their income, instead of saying, hey, you know, you qualify for 50% in financial aid, now all of a sudden you qualify for 50% off,
okay,
which is the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. It's the same thing because the providers are already lowering their rates for us.
Right.
So we were doing that for a few months and then ran into an obstacle, learned, you know, in a charity, you can never actually charge the client that you're helping for the care. The money must move in a way that it moves from the donor through the organization to a totally different person.
Right.
You can't actually say, hey, person you're helping, even if we're doing this at significantly less or we're bridging a gap or connecting dots, we can't actually charge them for anything.
Huh.
Yeah, so that was an obstacle we ran into. And so we couldn't keep using it as a discount software.
Okay.
And we did automate it. So just to give the short of that, we did take our Microsoft Excel stuff and put it in software. Yeah, but so we couldn't do that. So we went back to financially aiding and subsidizing the way we were. And then in 2021, this is the coolest. This is one of the coolest things that ever happened in my entire life. I got a LinkedIn friend request from this super entrepreneur named Matt Strass. And Matt had opened three companies at the time already. His first company was acquired by AOL. His second company was in the insurance benefits brokerage space, and it was valued over $500 million at the time that he left it. And then his third one was another insure tech kind of benefits brokerage company, and that was worth, I believe, tens of millions within a couple of years as well.
Wow.
So he adds me on LinkedIn, and I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this guy? Adding for cover of Forbes, entrepreneur, business insider. I obviously looked him up.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is this? This guy could take us for everything we're worth. Like, he's super interesting and has all the success. And he actually did message me and ask for a meeting.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I was thinking all those things too.
Yeah.
And so I told the team, hey, I'm going to meet with this super entrepreneur, and I'm only going to tell him as much as a client could figure out, because he's also in, you know, kind of the health space, right? And so I go into my first meeting with him. We're about 30 minutes into it. And he said to me, would you ever consider transitioning Health Possible to a for-profit? Which was really funny, because when I first opened Health Possible, I was coming up with it when I was about 22. I opened it when I was 23. I didn't know anything about nonprofits at all. And I tried to open it as a for-profit, naturally. I was just trying to open a business that helped these people.
Yeah,
right.
And so I wrote dozens of plans back then, trying to do it that way. Couldn't figure it out. Couldn't make it work. Turned out it needed to be a nonprofit at the time. So he said that, and I said, you know, that's an interesting question. Everybody asks me that. Hospital executives, you know, major business executives, donors, like all kinds of people ask me that question. And I never ask why. Why are you asking me that? And he said, well, and he said just like this. Well, you seem like a smart person doing some really great things. And I know a lot of people looking to invest, and smart people doing really great things. So I'd like for you to consider the transition. I'd like for you to call me back.
Wow.
And I was like, holy smokes. And I didn't even understand the magnitude of it, you know, at the time. And we were already dealing with all these little problems at Health Possible. Like, it was hard to scale. We wanted to reach millions of people. Even wealthy people were reaching out to us, the upper class, and they're saying, hey, how can I get help from you?
Oh, yeah.
But they weren't even looking for the financial help. They were looking for the guidance and navigation and just, they just wanted to understand what was effective for them. And so knowing all of that, you know, I hang up that call and I'm like, oh my gosh, this is my chance. I have to figure this out, you know? And so I essentially locked myself in my kitchen, in my dining room, which is my home office. For like the next 48 hours, I got out a whiteboard. I just gutted the whole company and I was like, I have to figure this out. And so I was never going to transition it and change the nonprofit structure, because it does a really niche thing.
Right.
And it does a really special job, right? Like, it raises money and pays for care for someone who might not have the funds at any point in time, right, to get this.
Yeah, true.
Right.
Yeah, to get access to this or to afford this. And so I didn't want to change that. And plus the IRS mess that would come with that. I was not prepared for that either. Yeah, just the headache that would have been. And then changing it, all of our, like telling all of our donors and stopping donations. That would just be crazy.
Right, yeah.
So in the 48 hours, I thought, okay, well, if we open, you know, a new company and it simply acquires the parts that need to scale, mm-hmm. right? Which is really just the marketplace we had built, all these provider relationships that was private. Nobody knew about it. It was closed off from the public, kind of behind a wall in the software. Yeah, only for people qualified. And then if we bought that, you know, discount calculator that wasn't legal, right, allowed mm-hmm. to be used over there at the nonprofit, that could help a ton of people too. And so I went to my board of directors. I said, hey, I'd like to do this. I'd like to open this new company that just scales the providers, helps them grow their businesses and for, you know, as long as we can, but at the same time, unleashes that discount calculator someday.
Yeah.
And, you know, all the while, it's concierge wellness is what we call it today, mm-hmm. helping people navigate. And I got the board's blessing. They're like, yes, go do that. That's awesome. I said, great. You know, of course, we'll keep the nonprofit, you know, pay for care for these people. That will continue to happen. And then started the legal process. So that was a whole ordeal. I had to get Attorney General approval from the state of North Carolina. Jeez. Yeah, it was crazy.
That is not easy.
No, it was not easy. I had to submit a ton of paperwork because a nonprofit has no owners, mm-hmm. right? And so the state has to approve any kind of like big financial change like that. Mergers, acquisitions, anything like that goes through the state.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I didn't realize that.
So I started this whole process. And no matter what, when I went back to talk to Matt again, like this was the path forward. And it really motivated me to finally figure this out and understand how we could grow.
Yeah.
You know? And so I do call Matt back.
Right.
Yeah. I call him back and I said, hey, ready to meet with you. I've got something to tell you. We get onto our second Zoom ever. We're probably 15 minutes into this call. And I said, hey, I just wanted to give you an update like you mm-hmm. asked for. And I had no idea what was coming.
Right.
None. And I said, I just want to give you an update that I'm opening a new company. I'm going to call it Upper. Here's what it will do. I just wanted to let you know. Mm-hmm. And he goes, great. I'd like to be your first small investor at $25,000.
That's incredible.
And I was like, oh my God.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'll stop the madness there. But that was really like the big catapult and the big push to getting to Upper and what it is right now.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that. It was a lot. It's a lot.
That is. So for the people like me who don't know a ton, like difference-wise, what is, when you say for-profit, what do you mean by that versus like a not-for-profit?
Yeah. So part of the phone call I was on with him, you know, he did a great job of educating me on really the biggest differences between nonprofits and for-profits. He even connected me with another entrepreneur that he had a relationship with just in the investment world and whatnot. And she had worked only in grants and nonprofits for so long. And then she also moved to the for-profit sector. And essentially the biggest differences are just how local you want to be versus how much you want to scale. What does the financial capital look like to scale? Is your operation scalable without capital, right? Is it something you can do without investors necessarily? There was a lot that went into it. And he was a very philanthropic person. And so he has his company. I believe his company, I could be wrong about this, but I believe his company is registered as a B Corp. I do know that he donates 1% of his company every year to charity in general. And so, and that's millions of dollars, you know? And so that alone had me, you know, understanding that he knows what he's talking about, but also, you know, he really does care about scaling important missions.
Right.
Whereas a for-profit, you know, it takes massive financial capital to reach millions of people. It also depends how fast you want to reach them.
Yeah.
You know, but I didn't want what we were doing to stay local. I wanted it to be across the country. I wanted it to be really big. And so there's just a lot more ability to do that when you can raise that level of financial capital to go out and do that.
Oh.
So with the more wealthy people that were reaching out that wanted those services, what kind of services are you able to offer them now and how does that benefit them?
Yeah, we call it concierge wellness. Okay. And so another phrase for that we use is personal health and wellness management service.
Okay.
That I've heard.
Yeah. So think of like a personal assistant, right? Or somebody who can just plan and do everything for you. Almost like, I don't want to compare it to a travel agency, but essentially what it is.
Yeah.
But for your lifestyle. And so those, that's a service that we provide where we say, hey, look, here's the starting point. We know the roadmap that is, you know, a good template for people in general, like start with, you know, your environments and your habits. And then should you become ill, what are resources that are natural options for you? If you don't want to just jump straight to the drugs or the surgeries or things like that.
Right.
And we have contact with all those people.
I think that's something important that we should touch on too. So your company does primarily focus on the natural ways of wealth 100%. And wellness, not the typical, I want to bring that up for everyone to know too.
Because
I've been following you on Instagram for a while and I was like, this is exactly like my level. So that's another reason why I really wanted to bring you on, is kind of breaking the mold of, all right, let's go to the doctor, get prescribed 15 drugs to get another 15 drugs prescribed to you to overcome all of the side effects that those drugs get.
So what you just explained is what I consider the health system, and I'll give a visual, and I'll do it especially knowing that the camera's here that can capture my visual. Okay. So when I tell people that Upper is a health system for wellness, most people don't know what a health system is in general.
Right.
It's this massive collection of resources in an industry, right? Of course, in ours, healthcare.
Right.
And it creates process. Okay. So it's not a maze. It's not this mess of a place that you've got to spend hours on Google just searching like chiropractors in my town, you know, or personal trainers in my town. It has process where you're trained. So in Western medicine, how it operates right now is when you get sick, the first thing that we're all taught to do
is go to the doctor.
Go to the doctor, right? So you go to your primary care. And so once you get to that primary care doctor, they have a system, a literal system where if you say, hey, doc, my chest hurts, I have a chest pain, you'll say, oh, well, I'll refer you to the cardiologist. Okay. And so that first line of that system, I suppose the second, really begins. Mm-hmm. Okay. So now you're there at your referral place and they say, oh, well, I'm going to prescribe you a drug. It automatically gets sent to, say, CVS, right? It's getting sent to the pharmacy and you're trained to just go there and pick it up. Okay. Around that, you hope that your health insurance pays for it, right? There's financial integrations in place or resources in place to help you afford these things.
Yeah. Right.
Now you have the side effect, right? Mm-hmm.
You go back to the doctor.
And you stay here forever.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we hope not, right? But very often that's what happens. People get trapped.
Exactly.
There's a lot more to that, but that whole system, a lot of people like to say healthcare is broken, right? I think there's parts of it that are broken, but for the most part, it works pretty well. Look how sick everybody is.
Right.
I
mean, it's doing exactly what it was made to do.
Unfortunately.
I was like, I argued that with somebody the other day. I'm like, the legal system. They're like, it's broken. I'm like, no, it's doing it what works. It's supposed to do.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. Most people don't look at it like that, but it really is. And so we just say, you know, we're building a system. We build process infrastructure. We make getting wellness resources and in the most sensible, effective, and efficient way, fast, all the things. So that's what we're building, is that system.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Thank you for our sponsor, the Leland Brewing Company, right over the bridge in Leland Township. Definitely check them out. It's a nice local spot with local beers that they're making on site, as well as some that aren't from the area. It is an amazing family-friendly location, and it's really nice. They got some greenery out back, as well as some nice food trucks that pop up every now and then. So give them a check out. Tell them that Whiskey and Wisdom sent you.
So if someone calls in tomorrow or whenever they listen to this and they're like, you know what? I need some help with Upper. What would that process look like for them?
Yeah. So first we have people fill out what's called a pre-existing care record, where they just let us know, you know, here's the people I already see and here's why I see them and I want to keep them or switch them. So first we need to understand what you're already doing, right? Okay. And what life looks like. And so once people fill out that pre-existing care record, which really includes no personal health information, just a factor of contacts. It's a contact list, basically. Once you fill that out, we then go ahead and fulfill a massive list of options within what you want to switch. And so by law, you know, we could never tell you one place because that means we're telling you, you know, where to go. Yeah. So everything has to be voluntary. And so we provide multiple options per category. And so we talk through why that option's ideal. You've also already filled out, by the way, essentially an intake form that's a preference sheet where you tell us your budget. Do you have insurance or not? HSAs, which is a health savings account, gender preferences of providers, like a lot of girls only want to see girls for OBGYN, things like that, you know. Yeah. And then just self-pay budget, like all these little nuances that help us figure out why these options are good for you. And we do that all year round. So we continuously plan for you, whether you're traveling, whether you're staying in one place. We also pay for appointments for you, book your appointments for you, sign you up for things, cancel things. Like, we are leading in the best way we can from behind, leading the way for you to be as healthy as you could be. That's where we start.
It's perfect for millennials, because I know a lot of millennials don't like to make their own doctor's appointments.
Yeah, they don't like to pick up the phone. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, It's perfect for me because my wife has been on me. She's like, you need to go to a doctor. And I'm like, but I don't like doctors.
Yeah. Well, and you haven't found the right one, you know?
Exactly.
Well, I haven't been to one.
Okay. Well, totally fair. So you have this kind of preconceived notion of what a doctor will tell you or do with you. I got you. So there is such thing as naturopathic doctors. Are you familiar with them?
No. I've heard the word.
Most people are not familiar with them. I can't even believe, having worked in the general wellness space for so long, I didn't hear about them until a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Well, they're not recognized in something like 24 plus states in the United States. They're allowed to practice, but can't be covered by insurance. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing really is that you don't know who's a real doctor or not because their licenses aren't enforced in so many states. Yeah. So a lot of people, we actually have dealt with people running around and learning about people who are running around pretending to be doctors that are not.
Oh, wow.
Specifically naturopaths. Yes, because they're not recognized in the state of North Carolina. It's a problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But so a naturopathic doctor, just so you know, typically think of it in the most basic way that they just give you natural options first.
Okay.
They're a hybrid of natural medicine and Western medicine, but Western medicine is going to be as last resort as it can get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's why I've heard of it, because I have a friend who's been going through a lot of like health issues, and she's like, well, I went to this normal doctor and I call it a normal doctor
because
Western. And then she was like, well, I did some research and I saw this particular thing kind of helped. I was like, yep, I would have never known about that.
Yeah. They also just look at the whole person more often, right? And that's pretty much their job and their mission is to, their mission, I believe, in medical school, what they follow is do no harm is what they go by. And so they're just perpetually looking for the treatment that does something without the side effect.
Interesting.
Yeah. That makes sense. It's a do no harm practice of medicine.
That makes sense.
Yeah. But yeah, when I say holistic, I mean they just look at every area of your life, right? And that's pretty much what do no harm is hey, oh, you've got this pain or you're dealing with this, rather than just me blanketing it with this pill to make that symptom go away. We're going to say, well, did you sleep good last night? How much water do you drink? Yeah. Do you exercise? Do you have a family that loves you? You know, there's a lot of parts to you. And that's what they're concerned about the most.
I loved when I saw that you guys partnered up with Madewell as well.
Yes.
Yeah. Because they embody that. Like, I know a bunch of people that go there, and I know a lot of their, Jennifer knows a lot of people that work there too.
Yeah.
And that's kind of their whole philosophy as well. They're kind of looking at the therapy side of it and then move into like, okay, well, you're having this type of issue or problem. Are you eating right? Are you working out enough? Or
whatever the case may be. They eat, sleep, and breathe that notion. I've heard a lot about a lot of providers, period, throughout the state of North Carolina since getting into the industry so heavily and on the tech and administrative side. I've never heard anything bad about Madewell, ever. Yeah, only good
fantastic things.
Yeah, it's awesome to hear.
Yeah.
For those like me who didn't know what Madewell was, it's a it's a local company to Wilmington, and it looks like it's like, is it off Park? It's behind Hobby Lobby.
Yes.
For those.
I haven't been there physically in person before, but yeah, it's a very popular practice. It's a therapy office. They also now have health coaches there as well. I believe the owner is into yoga. She also certified yoga. Mm. Yeah, I believe she is. But yeah, they're very dynamic in the services that they provide. They make sure they are able to touch many points, not just one.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure with starting a large company like this and growing at the, it seems like the growing at the speed that you're growing and having the backing that you have.
Trying.
it's always trying at the first beginning stages. What are some of the obstacles that you have faced and are facing now?
My number one obstacle, and it is a personal obstacle, is my ability to communicate what Upper is and the problem it solves right away within 30 seconds. So just communicating well exactly what it does, which is also why you don't see a lot of marketing about us online. It's not because I don't want to market. I struggle every single day with what is the message that needs to be put out to the public. Right. You know, that's not just a filler post, but actually tells them something. And so I struggle to do that still. I'm learning how to do it because it's very different. It's very new. You know, the wellness industry has never worked together. Right. And so is the first thing I tell you that we provide you guidance. It really depends who you are, I think. You know, if it's a provider, I tell them, hey, we're going to help you work together, right? But overall, it's ever changing. I really try to customize it to who I'm talking to. But yeah, communication and marketing has been my number one obstacle so far.
Yeah. I can see that too, because you almost have to educate the consumer.
Oh, 100%. It's the adoption process.
Exactly.
It makes it slow.
Right. Everyone's used to the Western style of medicine, right? Like go to primary, get referred. So to change people's mind in general, other than the people already know about it and doing it, I can definitely see that being an obstacle.
Yeah. And what's really funny is that it's not hard to communicate it with investors, for example, or with providers, with people who work in the space period.
Yeah, right.
They get it almost right away. It's the consumer that I struggle with the most, because I've been a consumer, right? I've been an athlete. I engage in these things myself, but not in the mindset that I never understood it at all. I came out of college sports and understood it since I was a kid.
Right.
Almost. Yeah. So just learning the consumer side of the education. Yeah.
I feel like that's an issue a lot of people are having, like going from, like, I have this argument in my head all the time of like, oh, hey, everyone at the top level of businesses, like making products are like, oh, this is what everyone wants. And this is what I'm telling you to get. But the people at our level are like, I don't want that. I would much rather prefer this.
Yeah.
And how do you connect this information to this person and trying to find someone who can translate? Because I feel like it's two separate languages. Because like you're talking to providers and they understand everything. Mm-hmm. It's like speaking Japanese, and then you switch over to talking to somebody at a base level, and you're like, well, this is like AAV. It's a totally different. It's based off of something, so they should understand it, but some people don't.
Yeah,
right.
I just should start telling people, well, if you don't feel like looking online for all of your wellness care, I'll do it for you, save you a ton of money and time. Right. Yeah, but that's probably the easiest thing I could tell people.
Should.
It just needs to be more emotional than that, because it is, you know?
I mean, if you condense it into an ad spot, I'm sure someone could like read it for you.
Yeah. I should look into it.
Yeah. I think a lot of it too is storytelling.
It is. Which I have stories to tell.
Right.
You never know from the way I try to communicate it that I went to college for communications.
And communications is a very large, broad concept.
Yeah, it is. I was very into the theory side of things. But
okay, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I should look into it because I do need help with it really bad. But
have you thought of hiring somebody for it?
Not at the stage, because it's not a stage where you could make it commission based and it makes sense.
Okay.
We're not at a level yet where we can hire and just pay someone essentially retainer, which is what payroll is.
Okay.
Right. So everything that we do right now is essentially commission based, and it's all grow together, scale together.
Need to find someone like the painter for Facebook that did a mural in the Facebook office. And he just got paid in shares when shares were like a quarter of
give
a
people
penny.
Equity. Yeah. I do have some partners that are in on equity. Yeah.
Okay.
That's also something that your investors want you to be wary of.
Yeah. They're very concerned about that.
Yeah. Well, you don't want to give away your company.
Exactly.
You know, and if people don't perform, you've got to find a way to get rid of them. That's very hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very hard.
Because then you're buying them out for significantly more than what you want to give someone for your own company.
Yep. It's not a good situation.
No.
Yeah. But so when you guys started Whiskey and Wisdom, did you have a plan to scale it big right away? Or is it something you just started doing for fun?
We just started doing it for fun.
Yeah.
That's the best.
Yeah. That's the best. I just started doing Health Possible for fun, my nonprofit. Yeah. And it brought me to where I am now.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
I feel like I never thought about it. Like we started, I've hit that point of the year where everyone's posting like, just do it kind of marketing out there. And I'm like, you know, that's kind of what we did, is we just went out and did it. We would love to be profitable. I mean, that's why we have a recording
studio.
Right. <Yeah. laughs> I'm going to be 1,000% honest. Everyone's like, oh, I want to be capitalism is capitalism. I personally don't give a fuck. I would much rather just go flat. Like if we could recoup the money that we've invested in the space, I'm like, all right, let's go.
So then what is your ultimate career goal? If it's not to do something like this full time and profit off it and live off of it.
Oh, my ultimate career goal is to have a podcast studio in the back of a brewery or a bar and just chill and just record whenever we want to.
But you don't want to be able to live off of it?
That's what I'm saying. Just balance.
Yeah.
To me, being overly profitable, like capitalism, everyone's like, oh, I'm making a ton of extra money.
I got you. You don't care about having tons of money.
No, I just want to be... pay off my mortgage, pay my bills, and I'm not like...
So I would say that I felt like that my entire life until literally 3 weeks ago, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because I have learned over the years, as someone who grew up with no money and getting to the point, even that I'm at now, which I still don't make, you know, money in my company, which is fine, but I plan to now, right? Which I didn't used to plan to. And now I very actively and proactively plan to. But with money being a tool and being able to truly experience what it's done, even moving from, I mean, I'm still at both, but having a nonprofit and a for-profit and how they've even helped each other so much and to help so many more people. It's a tool to help more and more people, right? So depending on what you use the money for, you know, I think that if you're going to profit a ton and have no plans with it and just say, I guess I'll just buy Rolls Royce, right? Or I'll buy my Aston Martin. Like, you know, that's one type of person and that's one way of living. But your goal with that money could, of course, be to open somebody else's podcast studio or to, you know, help the next entrepreneur or to even open another business with just another mission.
Yeah.
You know, so what you put that money into is really, of course, contingent on who you are. But the money that I plan to make with the companies will continue to just fund more companies and impact on more and more people. That's my goal. Huh.
There's a few people that I know in my business that their main purpose for making money was to create more businesses, like what you said as well, in order to provide more jobs to individuals, to have living wages, and to be able to have a good work environment.
Yes.
And to build an organization like that.
Mm-hmm. I was telling somebody this morning. Thank you, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm excited to try this one. It's like my not latte latte. Right. I was telling somebody this morning over Instagram, they put, and I won't say here because I don't want people to know what it is because it'll happen before I want to open it. Right. But they posted a certain business that is adjacent to a company I want to open. And I wrote them and I said, oh my gosh, I cannot believe that you're doing this. This is something I want on upper. And then long term, here's actually an idea I have with this industry. And I told them my next business move and they're like, oh my gosh, that would be awesome. And I've already, a couple people I've just surveyed it with have already asked, oh, can you, if you do that tomorrow, can you come to my house? Like, can I be your guinea pig? This, that, that. I actually, with no intention of opening it and just staying focused on progressing, you know, what I currently have.
Right.
Probably already collected 5 significant leads.
Oh, that's great.
Which is cool.
Right.
And it makes it so hard to stay disciplined. But yeah, always looking ahead to the next company is, yeah, the move, yeah. I think.
That's something I've noticed about entrepreneurs in general, because I'm similar in a aspect where you get started on one thing and you see another opportunity, like just like slightly left of that. And you start focusing on that and you're like, oh no, I need to build this bridge first. This bridge needs to be finished before I can build another bridge.
It's an easy trap to fall into. And entrepreneurship, I mean, serial entrepreneurs experience the addiction of problem solving. Because once you solve one problem, you inherently learn all the millions of tiny problems that live inside that big problem.
Yeah.
Right. And so there's a lot of investors out there in the world who will only invest in a company that is like a graduation, right? Or an extension of the former.
Yeah.
Because once you learn how to solve a problem, the solutions from there on become endless, right? And the potential success then becomes endless because you found a trail that can forever be blazed. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that process. As soon as you've figured out the magic potion for that process and that investor understands that you know what your process is and they can kind of see that same path along the way, it's so much easier to start raising money at that point.
Yep, exactly. But also why they're serial entrepreneurs, right?
Hey, exactly.
Yeah. Can't stop solving problems. Gosh. Yeah.
So if there was, yeah.
Well, it's funny because like, I feel like that's entrepreneur wise, there's a lot of people in like the millennial age range because a lot of our parents and grandparents said, hey, fix this, do this. And so we got used to solving problems and then you're like, well, let's profit off of that. And now I'm stuck being the problem solver at the store all the time.
Yeah.
That's the other thing too. There's everyone wants to be an entrepreneur for whatever reason. And which is good for that person.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what people don't realize and don't put enough, I guess, emphasis on is what's called an intrapreneur. So someone that is solving problems inside an organization. And there's a lot of value for that.
And yes.
Go ahead.
I recently told somebody who came to me for advice on what they should do for a living and potential entrepreneurship that not everything has to be 100% reinvented or invented, period.
Right.
You know, by yourself. There's so many companies that exist. I actually wonder if our schools, you know, are lacking the effort to help kids not find the industry they want to be in, but find the company already solving the problem that they align with, right? And care to solve the most. I mean, I would never not be an entrepreneur just because it's at this point, it's truly in my blood.
Right.
Yeah, truly. But if I were to ever not be an entrepreneur, hypothetically, I would just look for the right company, period, where I knew I could be the intra.
Right.
Right. And just provide that value. I mean, how that's not equally as or nearly equally as fulfilling, I'd be surprised.
Certainly.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. Joined forces.
I was like, that makes sense because every entrepreneur probably needs an intrapreneur to help them.
100%.
Absolutely.
Yeah. We're nothing without our people. You know, behind every successful entrepreneur are how many, potentially hundreds to thousands of brilliant people. That's what a successful entrepreneur is. They're simply surrounded by absolute brilliance and the ability to execute.
There's a person we know that I won't say on the thing, but he owns a couple businesses and he needs an entrepreneur extremely bad.
Yeah. And there's plenty of them. I mean, I encourage my own fiance to go, you know, start his own company because he is so talented.
Yeah.
So talented. Yeah. Ranks high in his company nationally every year and the industry in general every year. Yeah. Really successful, smart person. And he says to me all the time, I don't want that responsibility. He said, I love doing this in general. Like I love putting in the effort and I love being successful and proactive and doing these things, but nothing about me wants to actually own the company and potentially lose it someday.
Right.
Because every company has to die. You're just always procrastinating the death. You know, that's what companies are. And so he's a perfect example of that. He is only and wants to be an entrepreneur. They are totally out there.
With me and my partner, we have that conversation every few months, or I guess every couple of years, but because we could always go out on our own and do whatever we're doing. But do we want to take everything with us that the company that we currently are under the banner of is taking care of? So it's like, and also too, the other thing that it's we have lot. To, yeah, the other thing we have to weigh is if we're worried about if the paper and toner is coming in, am I truly helping my client to the fullest ability? Yep. So that's another thing too. It all depends on the organization.
It does. Priorities. I think it's also a lot of personality. So when I was a trainer, this is 7-ish years ago. It was a while ago. It was.
Were you at Gold's?
I was at O2 Fitness, Hanover. So an original O2. Yeah. There's a lot of people who were Gold's and who are now O2 people, but they're really Gold's people. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But I was an O2 person and I loved training. I really did because I just loved helping people. Right. Mm-hmm. But it got really monotonous, you know, every hour on the hour, minute to minute. And if I'm being super honest, I got my first job when I was 12. And I mean a real job. Like I was, my mom would wake me up at 4 o'clock in the morning and we'd drive to the next town and she'd drop me off and I'd be there for the day.
Wow.
So I was tired by the time I was in my 20s.
Yeah, sure.
Really friggin' tired. And so loved helping people. But at the same time, I was trying to solve that problem of affordability. I also really just wanted to not be on that front line. I wanted to get behind a computer and just be at my apartment and just work on things, you know, by myself, but in a way that I knew I still had a direct line to that client where I was still touching. Like I was very much, you know, not in control, but like helping navigate or guide them, right? Putting them on a path that guided them correctly. And so for me, that was just getting behind the curtains. And that's a reason I wanted to be an entrepreneur. Okay. I didn't want to be a delivery person anymore. Delivery is for plenty of people.
Yep.
I didn't want to be the delivery. I wanted to be the creative.
Yeah. Yeah. That's neat.
Yeah.
You want to be the Wizard of Oz.
I wanted I wanted rest. Right. I really just wanted to sit in my house, take a break. Right. No, I'm teasing. But yeah, no, it really helped though. And I've thrived doing that. It's definitely for me.
Good.
Yeah.
With where you're at now, what would you ask the community, as in the Wilmington or New Hanover County community, that they could provide you?
Oh, that they could provide me?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
Because as entrepreneurs, you like to try to solve problems for others, but very rarely do entrepreneurs know what they want to ask from others.
Ask from others. Yeah, I think it kind of goes hand in hand with just the ability to communicate what we do, which is education, right, in an adoption process. I would really like the community to just pay more attention to their own life and where things come from. Mm-hmm. And so I think the simplest message that I could send is, you know, even down to, do you buy your food locally? Which can sound so cliche, but at the same time, that very small, significant practice truly gets people healthier. And I don't even say it with the intent to, you know, just support local businesses. Of course, that matters right. so much economically. But when we're talking about health and healthcare, knowing where your food comes from and what's in it, and whether those animals are pumped with hormones or not, or so many other things, how far do they have to travel? Are they at steroids to go across the country to make them last? Right. Yeah. There's so much that happens to your food when you're not getting it from right there in town. Entertaining tiny little behaviors like that brings significant change to the message I'm trying to send, or acceptance
right.
of the message I'm trying to send, which will also make people inherently leverage us as that resource for what should I be buying? Where should I be buying it? Right? Who is selling it? Where can I get it? How much does it cost? All those questions that you want to find out about those things are what we are here for.
Okay. Yeah, that you makes know? Sense.
So all those little nuances is my word today, I guess.
Right.
All those little nuances, yeah, matter a lot. I'd like for people to just care more about, you know, their own environment.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And so with everything you have going on right now, I'm going to steal Chris's question. I'm sorry. What does success look like to you?
Oh, touching millions of people's lives.
Yeah.
100%. Yeah. Just being able to meet someone on the street that you've never met before in your life. And not that you need them to reference your company. Mm-hmm. Like that's not, your company name is not what necessarily matters in that. But the fact that you're doing touched them, for them to say, oh, you know, I went through this company called Upper and they helped me, you know, change my whole marriage, or all of a sudden I started farming at my own house, or, you know, I found the doctor that changed my life and cured XYZ, who I never would have found from my insurance company.
Oh, neat.
To be able to run into a total stranger and run into instances like that, which has actually happened to me a couple of times recently.
Oh, that's great.
Nice.
Is really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, really cool.
On a random note, because Chris is Chris, I will say... Their website's actually super easy. Mm-hmm. I have it pulled up.
So
here.
Basic. It's yeah. the most basic thing. Yeah. I'm like going to drink
pulled it
after.
Up and I'm like, oh, cool. It's, I mean, it's set up similar how I have stuff at the store. And it's like just a Google Doc. Just fill it out, answer some questions, and you set up an appointment. Mm-hmm. So it's not like me. The other day, I tried to call Wilmington Health and set up an appointment. And they were like, okay, we'll put you on hold. And I sat on hold for like 20 minutes.
Oh, God.
And I live in the boonies, oh. So I lost cell phone service, and I'm like, I can't sit in my car because it's the only place of service Ugh. For an hour. I'm like,
that little thing right there is, I will give credit where credit is due. That little tiny thing that happened to you is one of the reasons people do say healthcare is broken.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a little, yeah, a little big thing. Go ahead.
But I was just like, hey, you know, it's quick, easy. It's a quick little survey. I think everyone should take a few minutes, fill it out. If you don't have a care provider, or if you need to update yours.
Yeah. Even if you just want to switch, mm-hmm. I think, yeah, one of the bigger things I've been telling folks right now, I started going on site with our partners and just sitting at, say, for example, OT Fitness.
Right.
And I just sit there and help members essentially triage them out of the gym mm-hmm. to services they need that aren't there. And so it's going really well too. But one of the big things I've been telling people, hey, do you have a doctor? Whether they say yes or no, if you say no, I can help you find one. If you say yes, I say, do you want one that's not a pill pusher? Mm-hmm. And so there's an immediate option to switch.
Yeah.
Right. I've only heard one person so far in about 3 or 4 weeks tell me they don't have a pill pushing doctor. Isn't that crazy?
I believe it.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it is crazy, but I also know people in pharma who are like, hey, mm-hmm.
they
I'm
really
making a lot of money.
They really believe in their, yeah, that is... I think a bigger push, but there's a place for it. I mean, if I'm too far gone and already on, you know, I don't want to call it life support, but even treating a pill like it's life support, you know, there's diabetics who, if they don't have their insulin, they're going to die, you know? And so you can do things simultaneously, whether that's insulin and fitness or insulin and nutrition, probably nutrition, right?
Yeah, right.
But I mean, there's things that can happen in a hybrid sense, but just the fast prescription process is crazy. It should be the last, last thing we go to. Yeah.
I mean, to that point too, when nearly 75% of every commercial that you watch is pharmaceutical.
Some sort of.
I think, sorry, not to extend you guys over time here.
No, you're good. You got plenty of time.
I think what bothers me the most about the pharmaceutical industry is not even the fact that they're pharmaceuticals, right? I think drugs have helped us come a long way as a society.
Yeah.
But they invent their customer. I think that's what bothers me the most. You know, by buying out the education system with grants and by buying out the food industry, right, on the way we interpret data, little things like that, the research that gets funded, like we only fund, and I can't really say only, but we majority fund, you know, pharmaceutical evidence versus the evidence behind acupuncture, maybe, you know, but they really invent their customer by making us sick with food, so many other things, and then
I'm sure you saw
side effects.
Yeah, I'm sure you saw the research that just came out too, that Lucky Charms is healthier than eggs.
Right. What? That's invented. That right there is inventing your customer.
Exactly.
That's insane. Like if I get
that's
a car
legit
accident.
Research that came out.
No, did you see that? You didn't see that? Oh my God. Yeah. Yes.
One of the healthiest things you can have is Honey Nut Cheerios too, by the way.
It breaks my heart that people believe
see?
It.
But okay, so I'm also one of those people who thinks the government is just, in general,
toying with our lives.
Yeah.
Yes,
they are. They do. They absolutely do.
But that makes me laugh because I'm like, well, statistically speaking, you know, Lucky Charms is cheaper than a dozen of eggs currently.
Debatable.
Right.
So
highly debatable.
That's why they're like in this argument. Me personally, I'm like,
it didn't ask for the price of it. It said healthier.
That statistic alone, the price statistic alone, only talks about the literal price, right? On the front of the tag, what it does not talk about is how much of it you need in general and over how much time,
right?
That dictates how much money you're going to spend on that object.
Yes.
Right. So, how many Cheerios do I need versus how many eggs do I need to be full?
Yeah.
Very or to true. Get my nutrient density, you know? Very different. Very different
very
metric.
Very different.
Yeah.
Which is why I need more friends who have little farms that can produce eggs.
Do you have any land or even a deck to have potted plants?
I do have land. We're actually looking. So this was like random things we were looking at for this next year.
You're going to be the sixth prospect. My next business. Keep going.
It was to like we bought our house and we put the fence in. And I was like, I'm pretty sure my HOA standards said I could put my fence further up my house. And so my goal is to move it up the side of my house and then have like a small garden on the side of it.
There you go. Do you want to do it yourself or do you want somebody else to do it for you?
I would much rather someone else do it for me.
Boom.
Because
prospect number six. Yeah. Here we go.
I'm at that weird spot where time and convenience hits and work drains so much out of me that I'm like, my day off is cleaning the house and I need a day of chill.
Yeah, you need a break.
You need to meet Robert Collins.
Okay, who's that?
He was on one of our episodes with what you're talking about right there. He would be fantastic to talk to
because
that's what he does.
See, I tell people without telling people what it is.
Right, yeah.
But it will be life-changing.
Yeah.
I think it would do, especially with all these, China's buying our farmland right now. Oh my God, we have to put a stop to that quickly.
Oh. Not to push our own podcast. Find Robert Collins' episode.
I'm going
to. I think you'll
push your own podcast. Be a business owner.
Right, yeah. Push my own podcast on my own podcast.
I think my neighborhood is weird because the HOA won't allow you to have farm animals, which I try to argue that I should be able to have a pig. And they're like, no, it's considered a farm animal. I'm like, dang.
It's my support animal.
What's their reasoning behind no farm animals?
Because it's an HOA.
It's allowed.
I wonder if it's due to smell or
my assumption.
Most HOA is uniform in cleanliness.
Mm-hmm. Cleanliness as well as resale value for the rest of the neighborhood. Because if multiple people have farm, anyways, I'm not arguing with that. But
another thing that could change is healthcare changes and food.
Yeah,
where food comes from changes.
Yeah. A lot of my neighbors have their own above ground gardens.
Yeah. I mean, that should be a right. You can't dictate where I'm getting my food from. I mean, that's a big deal.
So that's kind of the thing I'm trying to learn. I'm slowly letting my thumbs turn green as we're growing stuff in the house. And I'm like, if I can make this last, then potentially I can grow something outside.
Yeah. Oh, you can. And if you can't, my next company can. So,
so I got total away from being healthy, We're going to go backwards. How did you what did you think about this bottled and bond?
Definitely stronger.
It's much stronger than the Haller.
Much stronger.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, yeah. I got a lot of the coffee flavor. Now I have to drink it again just to.
Yeah. It brings a little bit more than the vanilla latte, I'm sure.
Yeah. A lot more coffee in there.
Yeah.
But I am probably going to buy the banana one and come up with a craft cocktail for that. Or just reach out to Be in the Flow.
Right.
Brian,
yeah.
I love them over there. Flying Machine Bartender.
Okay. I was like,
he's awesome.
My brain connects everything and it takes me half a second.
Oh, but yeah.
I'm with you. I think of people in terms of their Instagram handle.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if that's the only place you see them and talk to them, and
it makes sense.
It becomes your identity. Yeah.
I mean, it could be a good smoothie, though. Like, you can mix the Haller at. Oh, yeah.
Oh, 100%. Or even a dessert cocktail. Yeah.
Yes.
Like those dessert drinks.
Oh, I love those.
With the ice cream and everything. Mm-hmm. I've never even had one, but I want one.
I know. They just look so good.
I dream about them. Yeah. And I don't even love alcohol that much. Right. Yeah.
And my second question, because Tyler stole mine. If you could tell your younger self something, what would it be?
Oh, I used to think that I was a really stupid kid. Like a really, because I was not good at academics and I was not a good student at all. I talk about this a lot, actually, when I end up in interviews or on podcasts or on the radio or anything like that. I was so bad at school, and I let this created environment let me think something of myself that just didn't have to be that way. And I wonder sometimes how would homeschooling have affected my self-confidence about academics differently, just to have a different environment, right, or a different structure around it. But I would say to my younger self that just because something is the way it is doesn't mean it has to be that way or be done that way or be done that way forever. And that's not something, I don't think kids think outside the box as often as they could or as in depth as they could. So I didn't learn how to learn until, or how I learned probably until I was 22. I struggled all the way through school. Yeah. I was diagnosed learning disabled when I was in the ninth grade. That followed me for 8 years through college.
Wow.
Yeah. A separate location, help with exams, reading things to me. And I could read, but there was almost this like filter that I couldn't read because I couldn't retain information. Things were explained very poorly. Everything is talked at you at school. It's not actually a fluid conversation. Yeah. I would just have challenged myself to go learn how I learn much earlier so that even when I struggled in school, maybe I could have gone home and called a lot of really experienced people and had conversations about the topic over the phone and learned that way. Or just even with my own teacher, that would have been fine too. Yeah. Learn how I learn earlier. Would have gotten a lot farther than I am now.
I didn't learn that until I was getting my master's because there was one time. Yeah. I sat down with one of my professors and similar thing too. It's being talked at you, right?
Yeah.
And there was one thing I'm like, I should be able to get this. It seems so simple. Why can't I understand it?
Because you weren't able to provide anything back.
Yeah. And I went and I sat down just across the desk from her and we talked about it for like 25 minutes and it clicked instantly. Mm-hmm. And it was amazing.
People think that that is what school is, but it's not. Mm-mm. It's not at all.
Mm-hmm. It's weird because like I said, I'm the problem solver. Mm-hmm. Some people might argue that statement or sentiment. No,
I'm sure you are.
I've hit the point where I'm like, I know because my wife's a teacher and my mom's a teacher. I know everyone learns differently.
Right.
And having to sit there at the store level and be like, oh, hey, like you need to learn this, this, and this. And they're like, well, I don't learn this way. I'm like, okay, cool. I hear you.
Yeah.
But this is what's required. I need you to go through this.
Isn't that terrible?
And take notes. And then I will go back behind and be like, okay, let's educate you how it makes the most sense. Like if you need to learn watches, okay, go through this course, take some notes. You take whatever time you need. And then we'll go through and get hands on. Because a lot of people are like, oh, I need to do this, but like with my hands and do it. I'm like, that's fine. But I still need to. Like, just like with school, I still got to check the box.
Yeah. Isn't that terrible?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a way to advance society. That's for sure.
Definitely.
Or quickly. You mentioned something about your master's and I almost went for my master's and my now fiance back then posed a very significant question that changed the entire trajectory of my career. We had just gotten together. We might've been together maybe 6 months And I said, I got into the ECU Brody School of Medicine for
a good school.
For a master's in public health. And so I already had my nonprofit, had no idea what I wanted to do, though. I wasn't living off my nonprofit. I still had another job.
Yeah.
And so I said, I'm going to go to ECU and go back to school. He was like, well, if you do that, I just want to let you know I'm not interested in long-distance relationships. Mm-hmm. And it's only 2 hours away.
No.
But obviously, if you're in school full-time, he works full-time, you still work. Yeah, it still matters, right? Mm-hmm. There's still time, significant time taken away. And so I had to consider that. And then he said, well, do you know why you're going back to school? What do you want to do with it? And I said, well, I have no idea. That's why I'm going back, so I can figure it out. And he said, that's the opposite reason why you should ever get a degree.
Yep.
You should only get a degree when you know you'll be paid back for it, when you know exactly what it's for, when it has outlet and purpose. Mm-hmm. And so I did not go back to school.
That's very smart.
I did not go back to school. And then I met somebody the other day, and I'm obviously happy about it now. And I might have been happy about it either way, but I'll tell you what, financially, I'd be in a lot more debt than I am right now.
True.
Right. I'm almost in no debt right now.
Yeah.
But that was $46,000 for 2 years. Yeah. Yeah. And I can't even remember actually if it was per year or for the 2 years. I want to say it was 46 for both years.
Yeah.
But then I met somebody just the other day, and she said, I'm going back to school for, I won't even say what it is because I don't want to sound, you know, too critical or anything, but she said, I'm going back to school for X. And I said, oh, well, what do you want to do with it? Always remember. Yeah. Cause I went through that conversation, you know, and she said, oh, I have no idea. And I had met her for, you know, 120 seconds. Like I had been sitting there for like 2 minutes. And so I wanted so bad to say that is the opposite reason that you should go to school. And I didn't have in me to potentially offend this poor girl, you know? And so I didn't say anything, but I was like, God, that helped me so much and changed my life.
Mm-hmm. Makes a big difference.
Yeah, it does. What did you go for?
Finance.
Okay.
So that's my full-time job.
Yeah. That's
so
awesome. Yeah. You had a reason to do it.
I had a reason to do it. I paid for it while I was going to school and everything.
So. I should have asked you that first.
Yeah. Well, no.
No, it's fine. Yeah. And I'll be honest, the reason why I went back is one, I knew I was going into finance. That's like everyone talks about their purpose, their burn, whatever the case may be. I knew that's where mine was. Mm-hmm. So that was one reason I went back. The other reason why I went back, I didn't do my undergrad properly. I was only there to get the grade. I worked 50 hours a week. I would go pass. Great. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get the connections that I wanted. Mm-hmm. So I went back with the intention of being extremely involved those next 2 years.
Smart.
And to meet everyone and to make all of the connections and network.
So smart.
And that's how I got the job that I have now. So it fully paid off. Thank goodness.
That's interesting. Yeah, that actually really is what school should be for, is the connection creation and the networking. I did not use it for that at all. I mean, I made connections, but none had anything to do with the career I ended up in, you know, but all the people I met at the gym helped me open my first company.
Yeah.
And so I learned how to leverage them, but
it was a year after my bachelor's that I was looking at some of the people I had graduated with and people I'd gone to school with. I'm like, dang, they got all of these like crazy jobs. I'm like, that guy's done with a box of rocks. Like, what the heck?
Yeah.
Like, he barely passed. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, but he did this internship. He did that internship. He met with this executive at this place. And that's how he got this.
Do you believe, and I want to bring more depth to the saying, but do either of you believe it's not what you know, it's who you know?
Facts.
Mm-hmm.
Not even, no question.
Bring
about
depth.
It.
Bring depth. Why?
So it's because my argument is Tyler went to school to make more connections, right?
Sure.
And he needed it to get in his space because without it, he would be treading water trying to get into that space. Mm-hmm. Whereas me, I didn't go to school. Like I went for like total of a year.
Okay.
And I was like, okay, cool. School's not for me. I'm smart.
I went, but it's not for me.
Yeah. I'm like, I enjoy learning, but not at what this pace is at. So I went to school and I was like, nah, bump this. Went back into retail.
Bump this. I love it.
Because I joined the military. I could technically have it paid for.
That's awesome.
But all of the jobs I've gotten since leaving school have been because of making connections and being the great salesperson I am.
Yeah.
And so I've moved up from making like barely over non-taxable to what I'm making now because I'm a great person and making connections. So it's not,
well, oh, and you're a great person. And so people want to do business with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I think that it is still both. And this is my opinion, but I think it is who you know, right? It opens a door, gives you opportunity. And of course you do, like, people need to want to do business with you or want to empower you. But once you get in the door, now can you learn how to do it?
Right.
Yep. Right. How fast can you learn how to do it? Can you? Because then if you can't perform, you know, just because you know somebody, I think that comes down to like, if it's only who you know forever and ever and you can't learn, that's like terrible family generational businesses that just can't right. fire the son or the daughter, you
yeah,
know?
Yeah.
But I would say that if I couldn't perform on various spaces, like people would have been definitely quick to drop me and nothing personal. But
no, yeah, I definitely agree with that too. Yeah. You, after you make that connection and you prove that you're worth what you're worth, then being able to learn that position, definitely, because then it doesn't really matter going forward, right? Yeah. Because then you stay in the same place. It doesn't matter who you meet because you didn't learn going onwards.
There's a lot of bitter people in the world. And I only bring it up because there are so many bitter people in the world will just say, oh, well, you know, that's because your friends are this or your parents are that or you're this and that. But I mean, that only matters for a second.
Right.
You know, and yeah, I'm good at networking or I'm good at selling myself, but you've still got to learn it. You know, my brain's kept me there.
Yeah.
Yeah. My kindness got me there. My brain's kept me there.
That's great. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now that we're coming near the end.
Yeah.
And we've talked about your website.
And how basic it is.
I love it.
That's simple like, is best.
Yeah. The marketing and the website is actually what needs the most funding this year.
But I love it because it's classic.
Oh, thanks.
but my question is, how can people, like, can they find it?
Yeah, you just visit upper.health.
Upper.health.
Mm-hmm. And we are going to take our marketing a lot more seriously this year. There's the famous saying, right, you can't do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. Mm-hmm. It's the definition of insanity. And so I've not had a focus on marketing our whole first year and a half. And so this year, my intent is to focus much more on the marketing and this. So it should be much easier to find us on things like Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook. We have all those accounts. You could just go to Upper Health or upper.health and you'll find us.
Nice. Yeah, I was curious. I was trying to like Google it earlier.
Yeah.
And I was like, let me ask her.
It's still a secret.
Yeah.
Not for long.
I love it.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Of course. That's what I'm hearing. So I'm the one to ask the weird questions.
That's an important question.
They weren't weird. They were not weird. I'm glad that you asked.
Good. So yeah, thank you for coming on, Sarah.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Tyler.
Absolutely.
I appreciate you guys having me on.
Yeah. Thank you.
I gained a lot of wisdom. What about you?
Oh, of course I did. That's why I reached out to Sarah a few months ago.
Thanks. That's awesome.
No, it's been great having you on, just learning so much about your company. Personally, I'm like, I would have never known any of these things
because,
like we mentioned, I live in a bubble.
No, it's okay. I also just don't tell anyone. So I'll make it easier so everybody can find it online and they don't have to call me all the time.
Easy.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Check out the links in the description. Follow us, like us, leave us a 5-star review. Thanks for joining. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers.